Hey, greetings from upstate New York. Welcome to the Pastor Duke Podcast. I'm excited what I'm going to share with you today. This is one of the things I've dreamed about getting up for the world to hear. I hope it's a blessing to you. I call this podcast the greatest sign of all. And of course, I'm talking about the signs pointing to the second coming of Jesus, our blessed hope. I've heard said, Israel is God's hourglass. You want to know what time it is on the prophetic timeline? You only have to look to that little nation, only 7 million strong, only the size of the state of New Jersey on the eastern shore of the Mediterranean, Israel. No other nation like it. Its mile-high capital, Jerusalem, is also capital of the world. We haven't heard the end of the Jewish situation. The Jewish nation is central to what God is doing on planet Earth. From God himself birthing this nation through the old man Abraham from Genesis 12:1 on through the rest of the Old Testament would be the history of his descendants and of their coming Redeemer. Israel would be the messianic nation. Satan would try and fail over and over to destroy these people to keep the Messiah from coming. But in the fullness of time, this promised child, born of a virgin, born in Bethlehem, proclaimed by angels, would come to fulfill his mission as a Lamb of God, to go to a cross, to shed his blood for the sins, not only for the Jewish people, but for all the world. He would die, rise again, launch his church, ascend with promise to come again. But when he comes the second time, he won't be the Lamb of God. He will be the Lion of the tribe of Judah to set up his kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. The immediate question for his disciples was, when? Jesus' sermon is answering their question. It's called the Olivet Discourse, as Jesus preaches it to only his disciples on the Mount of Olives, overlooking the holy city, Jerusalem, and the glorious Temple Mount. It's recorded in all three of the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. My text for this greatest sign of all will be Luke 21, 24. In this amazing sermon, Jesus gives us many signs of his second advent. What to look for on the international front, the social front, watch for earthquakes, famines, pestilence. I call all these general signs. But in Luke 21, 24, Jesus gives the big one, four huge prophecies in one verse. He goes from the general to the specific. All focused on his chosen nation, Israel. Jesus goes from the general to the specific. What is crazy is this. As a 13-year-old boy, I watched this huge sign happen on a 17-inch black and white television on the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite as he closed that night by saying, and that's the way it was, June 10th, 1967. Even though we were not a Christian family, my mom told me this was a big event having something to do with the War of Armageddon and the end of the world. Mama later learned way better eschatology, but she knew it was a big deal. So here we go. Prior to verse 24 in Luke 21, not one stone will be left standing upon another. That didn't bring his poll ratings up much in the Jewish economy. But what he said was true. Now, there are four prophecies in Luke 21, 24. Number one, the Jews will fall by the edge of the sword. Number two, they will be led away captive into all nations. Number three, Jerusalem will be controlled by Gentiles. It'll be out of Jewish control for the first time in over 1,000 years. They're liking none of this. The fourth prophecy, at the close of verse 24, until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled. In other words, the Jews will be scattered. They will return in the time of the end and retake their holy city, Jerusalem. And that's what I saw happen on the CBS Evening News that night as a 13-year-old boy. Now, none of this is good news to his listeners. They don't want to hear this. They want things to be much simpler. They just want him to kick Roman butt, drive out the Romans right now, set up your kingdom. They were told over and over exactly what would happen, yet they were not comprehending it. It wasn't yet kingdom time. It was now cross time. And only days later, He is arrested, falsely accused, crucified, and praise God, 3 days later, risen. Following all that, just prior to his ascension, he commissions his church to go ye therefore into all the world and preach the gospel. He has given them all they need to watch for concerning his second coming. Persecution soon arose for the church, but none of these specific signs that Jesus told them about had happened. We fast forward to the year 40 AD. None of that had happened. 50, 60, none of that had happened. Then in 70 AD, it hits. It hits big. It hits hard. Emperor Nero of Rome commissions military general Titus to destroy Jerusalem. And boy, did he. The Jews will fall by the edge of the sword. Historians have that the Jewish casualty numbers between 350,000 upwards to even a million. 97,000 were taken captive. 2 million other Jews became vagabond refugees scattered all over the earth. Exactly like Jesus said. Nothing like this had ever happened before in the history of the world. They became known as the Wandering Jew. Jerusalem fell to pagan Roman control. Unthinkable, but it happened. The words of Jesus sadly fulfilled to the letter. But good news is coming in the final part of that prophecy, until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled. In other words, the Jews will come home when it's God's time. Dozens of other scriptures throughout both the Old and New Testament say exactly the same thing. The whole 37th chapter of Ezekiel is on the rebirth of the modern state of Israel as the dry bones live again. I once said to myself, show me a miracle and I'll believe. Of course, that was in my BC days. I've heard lots of people say that through the years. Show me a miracle and I'll believe. Well, I'm going to show you a miracle. But if you don't know the prophecies, you'll completely miss the miracle. We fast forward and look backstage to see a Zionist Jew named Theodore Herzl forming the first Zionist Congress in 1899. We've just launched forward nearly 2,000 years. He was praying for the rebirth of the modern state of Israel. Then again, major things begin to happen front stage on planet Earth, like World War I. We have Germany with a naval blockade of South Africa to stop the flow of nitrates to England. Nitrates needed to make gunpowder. Well, backstage, a British scientist named Chaim Weizmann discovers a way to extract nitrates from the air, out of thin air. Pretty cool, huh? Giving the Brits now a free local source of nitrates, leaving the German naval blockade in total waste of time and military resources out blockading in vain. The British military liberates Palestine from over 400 years in control of the Ottoman Empire. The British Parliament convenes and wishes to express their gratitude to Chaim Weizmann, who just happened to be a Zionist Jew, another coinkydink. They said to him, how can we say thanks? His request, open Palestine to Jewish immigration. They signed the Balfour Declaration, November 2nd, 1917, and it's political game on for the rebirth of the modern state of Israel. Open Israel to Jewish immigration. It's happening, man, just like Jesus said. Well, the first boatloads of Jewish immigrants arrived January 1st, 1918. That's an interesting year. In Jewish culture at the time of Jesus, 30 was the age of maturity. So we go from 1918 plus 30, we'll call 1980 conception, add 30 years, it brings us to 1948, as in May 14th, 1948. The unimaginable is happening on the world front. The Jewish state, after a nearly 2,000-year diaspora, wandering Jews, are now home. Only 10 years before, Hitler's trying to rid the world of the Jews once for all. His satanic Holocaust is discovered by the world, and world sentiment is softened briefly
by the barbaric act of the Holocaust. Harry Truman was in the White House. He acknowledged Israel as a legitimate nation among the nations of the world against political expediency in his day. God said, I'll bless those who bless the Jew. He did exactly that. And America launched into a tremendous season of financial blessing. The Jews are home, but immediately facing annihilation at the hands of 200 million angry Arab Muslims. Human chances of survival in their war of independence seem slim to none. But there was an old prophet named Zechariah who writes 520 years BC in chapter 12, verse 3, when the Jews return home, though all the nations of the world unite against Israel, all that fight against Israel shall be cut in pieces. Well, guess what? That's exactly what happened. It took 9 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, but the Arab Muslim nations were defeated and the modern state of Israel survived. The young nation is still standing. There would be continuous border clashes and terror attacks through the ensuing years. A minor war in 53, a major war in 56 over the Suez Canal. Israel was continuously on the brink of destruction, but the promises of the prophets still stood. Then a big one hits in 1967. A huge thing to point out here, from 1948 to 1967, Jerusalem was still in control of the Jordanians, not the Palestinians, as the mainstream media would have you to believe. Jordan controlled the West Bank. Jordan controlled Jerusalem. Remember the exact words of Jesus about the Jews falling? Those three signs of the four happened in the year 70 AD. They fell. They were scattered. Jerusalem was taken over. But the biggest of all is going to happen between June 5th, June 10th of 1967. We call it now the Miracle Six-Day War. Here we go. 200 million Arabs with 550,000 frontline soldiers to only 250,000 Jews, mostly reserves. So it's better than 2-1 in personnel, fighting men. The Arabs have 957 aircraft to Israel's 275. The Arabs have 2,504 tanks to 800 Israeli tanks. It's looking kind of bad for the Jews from the beginning. They would be attacked by Syria in the north, Egypt from the south, and Jordan from within. The nation is only 10 miles wide from the West Bank bubble, which is in the middle of the nation. It's a very difficult nation to defend strategically because of the central enemy within the West Bank, being the nation of Jordan. Under the command of Moshe Dayan and Levi Eshkol, the Jews launch Operation Focus, a surprise air attack early in the morning of June 5th. They flew in for the first time ever in aviation military history, are you ready, under the enemy radars and destroyed 90% of the Arab air forces on the ground, cluster bombed all of the runways so that the remaining 10% of the Arab warplanes could not even get into the sky. In only hours, Israel had full command of the skies. If the Arabs would have been wise, the Miracle Six-Day War would have been the Miracle Six-Hour War. But the Muslim theology, Israel does not even have the right to exist. They still have an overwhelming land force advantage, so the war continues. You think the massive air victory flying in under the radar was a coinkydink, or perhaps it was divine intervention? The plot thickens. Syria had control of the Golan Heights from 1948 to this time in June 1967. For 19 years, they used the strategic highlands to launch border raids into Israel. Jewish farmers below were forced to work off times at night to avoid Syrian sniper fire from above. The United Nations did nothing. I'm going to tell you now an amazing story, the story of Eli Cohen. In September of 1987, I was given permission by Colonel Yehuda Levy of the Israeli Army, who was one of our guides for our tour. He allowed me to tell the Eli Cohen story up on the Golan Heights as we stood next to a burned out Syrian tank. Are you ready? He began to tell the story. He could see me speaking kind of under my breath. And he said, do you know it? I said, I think I do. So he said, you tell it. And I did. I asked him, how did I do? He said, spot on. So it's my joy to share it with you right now via podcast. Eli Cohen was a Jewish spy coming, as it were, out of Argentina as a furniture tycoon to Syria. His story in detail is given in a book called Our Man in Damascus. Let me say that again if you'd like to go deeper into these things. The book is called Our Man in Damascus. He becomes friends with the top Syrian military leaders as planned and is escorted along the Syrian military operations on the Golan. He said to them, you have no shade up here for your troops. They said nothing will grow up here. He said, oh, yes, it will. The Jews brought in eucalyptus trees from Australia. They'll grow just fine. The Syrians thought, man, that's a great idea. And guess what? They planted eucalyptus trees along their military installations on the Golan. When the six-day war was breaking out, Eli Cohen wires Tel Aviv from Damascus, bomb the eucalyptus trees. This was the days before smart bombs, but the Jews, all they needed was a smart God. And so Israel's Air Force flies in again under the radar and bombs all of the eucalyptus trees, wiping out all of the Syrian military outposts. It wasn't thought possible in those days to drop percussion bombs from such low altitudes without literally blowing the planes out of the sky. Well, the Jews compensated. Are you ready? From bedsheets, they made parachutes, tied them onto the bombs, allowing the bomb drop time to be slowed enough for the Israeli planes to get out of danger. Wow, you just can't make this stuff up. I ask you, coinkydink or divine providence? Oh man, we're just getting started. The Syrians have hundreds of tanks on the Golan Heights ready to move to the south. But the Jews have only 26 tanks to defend the entire north of their country. The Arab plan was to have the Syrians come down almost uncontested from the north to surround the Israeli ground forces down in the Negev Desert just south of Jerusalem, where the Egyptians had better than a 2-to-1 tank advantage already. The Syrians would come down, they would surround the Jews in the Negev, wipe them out, drive an hour north to Jerusalem. Game over, Jews lose, Arabs win, every Jew will be killed and be floating dead in the Mediterranean Sea. But that's not what happened. Great is that nation whose God is the Lord. Israel had control of the air, but the air superiority seemed insufficient to hold off the ground invaders. There was an Israeli tank commander in the north. He remembered the ancient story of Gideon from Judges chapter 8. He's only got 26 tanks. He remembers the story of Gideon, how Gideon had only 300 men to take on 100,000 Midianites. He prayed, as Gideon did, to the same God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Gideon had planned to deceive the 100,000 Midianites to think they were facing an army of 300,000 Jews, when in reality there was only 300. In those days, each battalion of 1,000 soldiers had a trumpeter and one torchbearer. Gideon surrounds the enemy at night, gave the command, lit the torches, and blew the trumpets. The enemy wakened, totally freaked out, killed one another. God brought a miraculous victory to his people that was 3,500 years ago. Could the same God do something of that magnitude again in 1967? Answer, yes. Here we go. The Israeli commander spoke to each of his tank operators as though they were tank commanders of a battalion of tanks. It was a totally spontaneous plan. He prayed his communications would be intercepted. He prayed his tank operators would understand what he was trying to do. Private Moshe hears his commander calling him Commander Moshe. They understood it. They picked up. It's game on. Thank God for the Soviet Union, who did intercept the communications, fell for the ploy, hook, line, and sinker. Moscow wires Damascus, retreat from the Golan. Somehow the Jews got hundreds of tanks up from the Negev. Soon, satellite surveillance proved the Jews still had their tanks in the Negev, and the Russians falsely accused America of intervening and nearly escalated this into World War III. In the Syrian retreat, Israel wiped out many of the Syrian tanks, which I got to play on my visits to the Golan. But you got to be careful because there's still live landmines off to the side. So when you're a tourist there, stay on the path, which is hard to do for Baptist preachers. And with only 26 tanks, bedsheet bombs flown in under the radar, bombing the eucalyptus trees, Israel took the Golan Heights in the 67 war. Show me a miracle and I'll believe. I think that was a miracle, but the best is yet to come. Down in the Sinai, as the Egyptians have a better than 2.5-to-1 tank advantage, something most amazing happens. It's called in history the surrender in the Sinai. The Egyptian forces surrendered, not one shot fired. They surrendered against their own high command. The Jews released all the surrendering troops, allowed them to walk home, gave them food and water, and they're heading home. They killed none of them. The Jews now have 3,000 tanks ready to head to Cairo. The Egyptians have no air force. Now they have no army. They have no resistance. When immediately the United Nations intervenes and says, war is over. If it hadn't been for the intervention of the United Nations, Egypt would be the southern province of Israel today. Well, there was a big question waiting for the military leaders when they got back home from the surrender. I bet you can guess what they were asked. Why did you defy orders and surrender before even one shot was fired? You weren't there. I wasn't there, but they were there. They said, quote, we saw angels hovering over the Israeli tanks and were afraid to fight against God. The mainstream media nor our public education system will ever tell you any of this. Because Satan's the prince and power of the air, he'll keep this pertinent information. He'll keep the facts from you. These are the facts. Well, the result? In 6 days, Israel, against all odds, crushes the massive enemy and takes five pieces of real estate. Number one, they took the Golan Heights from Syria. Number two, the West Bank from Jordan. Number three, the Gaza Strip from Egypt. Number four, the Sinai from Egypt. Number five, the big one. Remember what Jesus said in Luke 21:24? The Jews will retake their holy city. Well, guess what? It happened. I saw it on TV as a 13-year-old kid. They arrived at the Wailing Wall, the western wall of the Temple Mount, the most holy site in all of Judaism. The biggest sign of all. The Jews are home. Jerusalem is secure. Jesus said, when you see this, my return is near. Now I conclude with an amazing follow-up story. It's June 2017. I'm at the British War Museum in London. Bottom floor, off to the side, I see a Soviet-built Egyptian tank. Caught my interest. I go up to the tank, begin to read about it. I'm taking selfies with the tank. It was one of the tanks that surrendered in the Sinai June 10th, 1967. I'm pretty pumped about that. I was a bit overwhelmed. I mean, I had tears in my eyes. This was a big deal to me. I got to touch it. I was there. I'm taking pictures. I was moved. Well, just off a few feet to the side were two other men, perhaps just a little bit older than myself. It was obvious to me that they were moved as well. They could see my extreme interest, and one of them asked me why I was so moved by all of this. I told them, I'm a preacher, and I've been telling the story of the surrender in the Sinai for years. I've told it hundreds of times. They were shocked that I even knew about it. And I asked them, why are you so moved? And one answered with a tear in his eye, quote, are you ready for this? He said, I was in one of the Israeli tanks and I saw the Egyptian tanks surrender. Then he winked at me and said, "But I didn't see the angels, but I'm so glad the Egyptians did." Wow. I get goosebumps every time I think that God let me be there and meet this guy. Man, you got to think, is all of this coinkydink or is this divine providence? Bottom line is this. God told us exactly what he was going to do, and he does it in plain sight. But if you know not his word, you see not his miracles. Hey, I hope this was a blessing to you. As I share my heart, give it all to Jesus. Please like, share, subscribe. You know what to do. As always, eyes on Jesus, hand to the plow. Jesus is big. He's good. He loves you. So do I. Bye-bye for now. Tune me in next time.